So before I get into this episode, I'd like to bring to light something I've been working on. If you're subscribed to my blog, you've probably heard of my Hunter Up initiative. If not, I'll try to sum it up for you. I'm afraid that hunting as we know it can go away, especially with the declining numbers of new hunters each year. I think it's so very important that we take the time and make a true effort to take the bull by the horns, and each and every one of us personally introduce one new hunter into hunting. I'm also very unhappy with the hunting community as a whole, and its lack of respect for fellow hunters. We as a community spend a lot of time bashing each other over stupidity instead of promoting one another. The amount of energy that we spend arguing can be spent on more important things like conservation or introducing a kid into hunting. So I'm issuing all of you a challenge to take the time to help fellow hunters, introduce kids, and for God's sakes, stop promoting content that puts hunters in a bad light. Resist the urge to engage in these foolish arguments that we have. Stop the bashing. When you feel strongly about something or you disagree with a hunter, a fellow hunter, take that subject off social media, message that person directly, have a one-on-one debate about it. You're either going to leave understanding where that other person's coming from, or you're going to have said your piece and you move on. We're not all going to agree with the way others do things. And we don't have to, but what we should be doing is supporting all legal hunting, because all we're doing is showing weakness and unrest within our community. And this just leaves chinks in the armor that let hunting anti-hunting groups tear down what you have built, what we've all built. And we need to support hunting and hunters and use our efforts for good, like conservation and hunters education and introducing new hunters, instead of wasting our time arguing about who predator hunts, who uses a Matthews and who uses a Hoyt. I mean, the stupid arguments that go on is just, it's okay to have debate, it's okay to have opinion, but really think about what it does when you argue on social media. You got to understand, if there's something that's negative out there and you keep pushing it, I can't stress enough, if you don't understand the way Facebook algorithm works or Instagram or any of these, it's you comment on something, oh, you're an idiot for putting that out there. And you commenting on that just pushes that content up the ladder further and further until it gets wider and wider and the net gets larger and larger. And the more people can see it, the more people comment on it, the more people can see it. And eventually it's going to get in front of the eyes of somebody who's an anti-hunter and not just arguing about the hunt. And it's not good for us. So please, stop the bashing and, get out there and help introduce hunters into hunting. Thanks again. And this episode, you can thank Phoenix Shooting Bags for bringing it to you. And this Hunter Initiative, they're helping me out with it. I appreciate what they're doing. And let's just jump into the next episode. Thank you. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we are going to talk a little bit about sheep hunting. And one of the things going on right now in Arizona, the sheep draw just ended, and well, the application period just ended, I should say. And so a lot of guys are talking about sheep, and hopefully one of my clients will draw. But one of the questions I get all the time, and I'm terrible. I shouldn't say terrible, but I would not call me an authority on it, is
judging cheap. So I got Greg McHale with us. Greg has a TV show called Wild Yukon, or Greg McHale's Wild Yukon, and he does a crap ton of sheep hunting. Now, I mean, I was talking specifically about desert sheep a moment ago, but Greg's had the opportunity to do stones and dalls and I think Rockies as well, right?
No, not really in the Rocky world here. It's up in the Yukon. We're pretty much just stones and dall sheep. So that's the majority of my kind of hunting is far as sheep go. And that's, I would consider that would be more my wheelhouse than any other sheep for sure.
Cool. So let's talk specifically about hunting up there real quick before we get into some of the questions I got you. If somebody wanted to come hunt stone or dall sheep, let's talk a little bit about the hunt itself. Like, what's the tag situation like? What do you have to go with an outfitter? Can you do it self-guided? I mean, all that
stuff. Yeah, up in the Yukon, if you're a non-resident, it's pretty, your only options are to go with an outfitter, a non-resident being non-resident Canadian. Mm-hmm. And that goes for Canadians as well. Sheep in the Yukon is probably, you know, it's the highest priority big game animal. If you were going to rank them from top to bottom, I would say that the government and the culture puts sheep hunting at the top. So you can't, if you're a non-resident living outside of the Yukon, whether it's, you know, Canada, US, doesn't matter. The only way you can hunt sheep is to get to purchase a sheep tag through an outfitter. So the access is significantly limited if you don't, you know, if you don't live in the territory.
So it's almost worth becoming a Yukon resident for like 2 years and going hunting for sheep, both of them, and then moving back to wherever you because it costs so much to go with an outfitter.
You know what? There's definitely some legitimacy to that. But the caveat is you must be a resident for a year before you can even get a big game license.
Okay.
So you have to suffer through a winter. Like, you really need to know that you want to hunt sheep and become a resident in order to make that leap, because, you know, you got to suffer through a full winter in order to be able to to get a license the next year. Jeez. So yeah, but that's definitely one angle, and that's the angle that I took when I moved here, you know, 20 some years ago, moving from Ontario. That's literally the angle that I took, and it's a big jump, but if you want to hunt sheep, then that's one way to do it.
Yeah, if I was a young single man, I would probably do that. Cuz I mean, then I could do the Yukon moose, I could do goats and just knock them all out and like, you know.
Yeah, you'd just be living in the best place in North America to hunt, in my opinion. But you can do the same thing. You can do it in Alaska, right? You know, you guys down in the lower 48 can just, you know, get it together and head up to Alaska and do the same thing. I don't know if they have the 1 year restriction there or not.
As far as I know, I believe they, I mean, as far as I know, I believe they do. Yes. It's something to that effect. Cause most states have that residency restriction. Like I know in Arizona, you got to be a resident for at least, I believe it's a year.
Might be
2 years. You got to at least have an established residency to get, you know, like a resident hunting license and be in the, you know, resident draw versus the non-resident.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see the government up here literally take a hard look at that. If they did start to see, you know, populations of people coming up for that reason, I don't know
that it would be
not
that
true. It's something. Well, I'm not 100% sure that people would, you know, go to that extreme, but at the same time, that sheep hunting is pretty much where it's at in my opinion.
Well, that and the cost
people
of
do it.
So for you to go sheep hunting, realistically, I mean, if you don't mind telling me, what does it cost you to go sheep hunting as a resident?
Like just fees, like
Fees
government
and,
fees?
I mean, just a normal trip, you know. I mean, obviously every trip's got food and travel and whatnot. So just what is
Okay.
cheap on cost you to go?
Yeah,
Without
okay.
the camera crew.
Without the camera crew, like I can literally probably do a sheep hunt for $300.
That's awesome.
Like, and that's so that's, but that is me, and I can, a $10 tag, and then
A ten.
fuel for the truck to go somewhere to start hiking, and then all it
Food.
is the food in your backpack. Like,
That's
if provided, obviously, you have the thousands of dollars of other gear that you
right,
need
right, 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 right,
to yeah to accomplish to accomplish what I'm looking for.
yeah, gear.
But it's,
Aside.
beyond that, like literally it's a $10 tag over the counter.
Freaking
The
nuts.
tag and the license, the hunting license is $10. And then the sheep tag is another $10.
Shit.
So
There's
20
sheep
total.
tags here in the United States for non-residents that are like 2,600, 2,800.
Yeah.
That's a lot of
And
money.
that's cheap.
I mean, that's cheap, but so
For
what
a
does it
sheep tag
cost?
for a non-resident, if I could just walk in and grab it, but then you have to go through an outfitter and pay for the tag and everything on top of that. So I mean, now it's not cheap. Don't get me wrong. But
What is
yeah,
it to be what an outfitter, more or less?
sorry?
What's the going rate to go with an outfitter?
Yeah, if adult sheep is in that ballpark of 20 to 25,000 now, and then a stone sheep, you're looking at 35 to 50,
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
depending on the outfitter
That's a lot
and
of money.
the quality of rams and all those kind of things.
Yeah, it just seems so unobtainable for me, unless something really drastically happens differently in my financial career.
Well, I don't know. Do you have your name in the stone sheep draw coming up?
For Alaska, or no, for Yukon?
Yeah. So
I didn't know you could put in for the draw. I thought you had to.
no. What we're doing is myself, Vortex, Kuyu, and Gunworks
Oh, I
we're
saw
giving
your
away a stone
yes, I
sheep.
did. I saw that.
So there's your shot. Get your name in, John, and maybe you and I'll be hunting sheep together this fall.
I actually did look at that. I forgot you were doing that. I wanted to mention that on here. Yeah, so tell me, let's let well now that we open the door to it, tell me a little bit about that. What's all entailed? What does a guy got to do?
Yeah, no, it's just it's the four of us got together and decided, what is great value that we can give to the people that support us and not just support us but support the hunting industry and the sheep and specifically in this case. The idea, all you got to do is you go to stonesheephunt.com and you can put your name in, your email, and then a number of different entries, and we're going to draw a winner of a BC stone sheep hunt with a Gunworks climber rifle, the same rifle that I use, and a Kuyu full kit package as clothing, and the same with Vortex optics. So it's like a $70,000 value in as
Crazy.
far as the prize, because the sheep hunt itself, like I said, runs 45 to 55,000. So
That's
altogether, this is a pretty good.
stonesheep.com.
Yeah, stonesheep.com.
All right.
Stonesheephunt.com.
Okay.
And you can just find out, Greg McHale's Wild Yukon on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, and it'll direct you to where we need you to go to sign up.
Cool.
But I mean, it's going to be a game changer for somebody. And I hope that somebody wins that has never sheep hunted in their life.
Which
And
is pretty much everybody that's going to put it, so
well, yeah, I think that everybody that has ever sheep hunted in their life will probably put in too, because they know how much fun it is. And if they can, if they can get a chance, then so the odds are good. But getting back to, to kind of your point about, the cost and the barrier of entry to sheep hunting, and how much it does cost. I'm kind of this opinion that doll sheep hunts, that number is very high. I understand that, but in my opinion, it's still undervalued. Because like sheep hunting in the north is probably, and I can't speak educatedly to this because I've never hunted, deserts or, bighorns, say down in the south. All I really know is this hunting world up in the north in these really remote locations. And there's something about getting back away from, hundreds of miles or kilometers away from a road and getting into the back country and then experiencing the solitude and the quiet of these places that we have up here. And it's unique. And sheep hunting is already at, at the sharp end of the sword. It's the pinnacle of hunting in North America, in my opinion. And in, anybody that's ever done it, I don't know a single person that's ever went on a sheep hunt that doesn't think that this is where it's at, as far as, getting after big game in the mountains for sure. So that's kind of, so when I say that I think that it's undervalued, because sheep hunting, shouldn't be, it should be something that is, because it's hard. And I think you should have to work for it
Yeah, for sure.
to a certain degree on numerous levels. And the kind of, up here to get back into this country is, it's not easy. So, I really just have this esteem for sheep hunting, and I always have since I first went. And I knew that after my first sheep hunt, I knew I was like, this is what I will do for the rest of my life.
I guess, I mean, honestly, it's because it's so available to you. I mean, I would be doing it every year too. I mean, I love sheep hunting. But I also love hunting everything else too. But there is something different, majestic almost, about hunting sheep. I've really, I mean, I've hunted Rockies and I've hunted deserts here in Arizona, and once for myself included.
Nice.
So I do have a desert sheep that
Good for
I was
you.
lucky to draw it here in Arizona in 2016. But I've guided a couple other deserts here, and I guided one Rocky Mountain here, and I've gone on a couple hunts with people, with buddies and friends and family, whatever, that I've and it's always an awesome time. Like,
Where was your Rocky? Where were you, not literally where, but what state were you hunting it in?
that was here in Arizona also.
Oh, you guys have Rockies in Arizona. See,
Got Rocky too.
that's almost bizarre to me, but
Yeah.
that's awesome. Were
Actually,
they
they got some good
transplanted
ones.
from the north or what?
I don't remember what the history is on it. All our sheep almost are basically transplants because they were all here originally, and whatever they brought in more because they were basically near extinction. And basically because of disease. Yeah, I mean, my buddy, one of my buddies actually shot, I don't know if he's definitely like the top, he's definitely the state record, but he's in the top five, I believe, of Rockies in the country, I want to say. That was here in Arizona.
Seriously, wow, that's a big ram. Was that archery or
Yeah, it was archery.
nice?
So yeah, but we got pretty much everything about Arizona is this. Our densities are very low on almost every animal you could think of, except for maybe coos deer. Like, our elk density is not, our population is not giant. Our mule deer population is widespread, but density is very low. But we grow big animals here.
Nice.
So this, even our, like, you wouldn't think this is an antelope state. The number one Pope and Young for the last like 20 years has been from here, from Arizona, like 97 inches or something like that.
Really? See, I would have thought that'd be Wyoming or
Yeah, you would
someplace like
think.
that.
So Wyoming's got a crap ton of them,
Yeah.
but they're very rarely get out of that mid-80s range over there.
Okay.
You never really see a bunch of, you don't see a bunch of 90-inch bucks coming out of Wyoming. And Wyoming's not a big archery state, believe it or not. Most of the antelope that get killed over there are all rifle. So I don't know what their Boone and Crockett biggest buck is, but definitely their archery is not bigger than the Arizona one.
Yeah, right on.
So anyway, back to sheep hunting. Let's talk a little bit about preparing for a sheep hunt, physically, mentally, logistics, some of the stuff that you do to get ready.
Yeah. Like, so for me, the preparation for a sheep hunt never ends. Like, just it just there's always there's, you can always be better at something. And but it's certainly up here where in the Yukon, it's I probably do a little bit more groundwork than most. But certainly the physical and mental preparation for a sheep hunt, in my opinion, are probably the two biggest things that a fella or girl needs to really focus on before going into the mountains. Because it's just this mountain environment up here, when you're out in it and there's nobody else around, there's no roads, there's nowhere to go. Like, you have to have it together. Like, you have to have all of you have to have your mental game prepared for pretty much whatever's going to happen, whether that's, some sort of an accident, like a serious accident, whether it's, a broken leg of you or your hunting partner, and what you're going to do and how you're going to deal with that to, just to being able to tough it out in a tent for 3 days while the rain comes horizontally in the door. These are the mental preparation that is so important in sheep country and backcountry sheep country. And those you when you can get that dialed in, and the only way to do it is to get out in it. Now, you can't prepare yourself mentally prepare yourself for a broken femur of your buddy or yourself. But at the same time, if you think about, and I'm not the kind of guy that thinks about negative things, but if you mentally prepare yourself for things that are going to come up that could be, very difficult or, catastrophic in a lot of ways, and you are okay with going into the environment knowing that that is a possibility, then you're ahead of the game. But then as far as the mental prep and getting literally physically ready, you got to get outside and you got to get out and suffer in conditions that could possibly mimic the mountain environment. So, that's what my training, actually I do a lot of indoor training 'cause it's really quality training. But when I'm doing the mental training and the physical mental training with it, it's always, I literally look for those worst days. Like, the shittiest day that's coming up, I can look on the internet and figure out what day is going to be pouring rain and it's going to be cold, and plan to go for a run in that situation. Plan to go for a hike with a backpack in that situation, because that's the mountains. So I
Not
would say,
exactly the not exactly the same scenario, but the same type of mentality. Like when I see that we're having a really windy day, I get out and try to shoot my bow in the wind.
nice.
Because
Same thing.
I mean, I feel like every time I'm out there, I'm faced with, wind. So,
Yeah.
but especially we just mentioned Wyoming a little bit ago. When I go to hunt in Wyoming and South Dakota, it's literally blowing 20 miles an hour all day long, every day. And if it's not 20 miles an hour, it's 30. You know, it's like there's no calm days ever out on that prairie stuff.
No, same thing. Like this week is like the wind has been crazy here in the Yukon the last couple weeks, and I wait, just take a look, and sure, plan to go flying training in the Super Cub, and sure, you could wait, for perfect weather, but get out in it. That's where you're going to learn how to, like, that's where you're going to get your best training is by putting yourself in the situations that are going to mimic the environment that you're going to be hunting in.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's honestly, that's something I've always preached, is to practice lifelike scenarios. Like you always got to put yourself in those positions. Like, I mean, you can get fairly good at shooting. Like someone use the bow again, 'cause it's something that people practice more than shooting a rifle. At least in the hunting. In the hunting world, if you're, PRS, something that's different. But, I feel like you can get pretty good at shooting a bow, 40 yards and standing in front of a bag with field tips, but it's never going to prepare you for squatting down behind a rock, one knee on the ground, shooting 60 yards in a crosswind across a canyon. You know what I'm saying? And
Exactly.
shooting broadheads. It's like, I don't know, it's like playing soccer to get good at basketball. You don't do that.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. And that's what, that I've done the same thing. That's I've done, that exact scenario. You sit there and you want to get this perfect shot every time, but that perfect scenario is never going to present, or it's going to present itself one out of every, 10 times, unless you're sitting in a tree stand, which I don't do. So, but in this mountain world, that shot never comes. Like that perfect broadside 40 yard, 25 yard shot, level ground, that shot never comes. So if you're not prepared just exactly how you described it, then what are you doing? Then you're setting yourself up for failure.
That's for
Mimic
sure.
the environment that you're going to be hunting in. And like at my house, I have this cliff behind the house, and I can shoot the bow down at 70 degree angles,
Yeah, that's awesome.
and over up to 90 yards. And this, that's just how I train, because that's where the probability of me arrowing a ram is going to be at probably a steep angle, or like you said, kneeling down behind a rock.
Right. It's when I shot my ibex in 2015, I trained very heavily like that. Like I was taking, I mean, 80 degree shots, 120 yards line of sight with a, like a 20 yard holdover. That's how crazy of an angle we're talking about. And I was doing all this practicing, and when I was presented with the shot, I made it. I drew that same tag in 2016, and I just didn't have the time to practice, and I missed three times. Three times. I mean, I was still happy with myself and impressed with myself that I created three opportunities, but I was so mad at myself that I didn't capitalize on them. And it was like, I mean, these tags and stuff, they're not easy to come by. We were just talking about how much, a sheep tag costs. And, you owe it to yourself to give yourself the best possibility, the best, opportunity. And a lot of that comes with your mental and physical prep and what you're doing to get ready for that hunt.
Yeah, when I killed my first ram with a bow, it was pre rangefinder days, and I could look at that at a sheep. I could look at a tree anywhere from 60, 70 yards and in, and know it that distance to the yard, within 2 yards for sure. And now, life gets easier and busier, and I don't now it's a rangefinder game because I haven't put in the time that it takes, day after day to understand or to get that range, the mental range in your mind. So, in a lot of ways, I've dropped the ball from where I was, 20 years ago. But it's you have to life gets in the way, and you have to figure out what it is that is the priority. So now we have these amazing rangefinders that can do a lot of the work for us in that regard. But that certainly doesn't mean that you shouldn't be shooting at these kind of distances and angles, and to try to make that shot when it does present itself. So yeah, I mean it's life, right, John? It says it gets crazy busy, and we have to prioritize what it is that that we're going to do. But for you to make three opportunities on a sh on an on an Ibex is yeah, it's pretty cool. Over how long was that hunt?
I did 7 days, 8 days.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
Every couple days having a good opportunity is pretty good odds. That's
Yeah.
pretty good.
Yeah, for sure. I actually had a couple more opportunities. I passed on two rams that were not mature enough in my opinion, so I didn't shoot them, but I felt those were slam dunk shots.
Oh
But
yeah.
anyway, that's besides it. You reminded me, you said, because you said the word game, when I before rangefinders, actually even when rangefinders were first came out, I was kind of a snob. I was like, I'm not using a rangefinder. That's cheating.
Yeah.
Rangefinder's cheating. And me and we used to do this game. We used to go do the 3D, 3D shooting has always been, not always, but not an unknown distance or whatever. But we used to do this where we'd walk. They had a mountain course here at the archery range, and you'd walk the mountain course, and you'd walk up to the shooting block, and you'd shoot. But what we would do is we'd walk it, and as soon as we can see the animal, we'd have to take the shot from there.
Nice. Yes.
And obviously you got to make sure you're doing this very safely, whatever. But we used to, so we'd take turns on who was the first guy to shoot. It would be like two or three of us, whatever, two or three other guys, and the first person to shoot. So that first person would guess the range, and everybody else would make a guess and write it down. And we did it this way so we wouldn't lose a bunch of arrows. The first guy would shoot, and if he hit anywhere near what he was guessing, and then we would match it up to everybody else, basically, and everybody,
Right
so
on.
that's kind of how we would do it. It was kind of fun, but
That's a fun one.
we got really good at judging ranges under 100 yards, and nowadays, I mean, I'm still fairly good at saying, okay, yeah, that's this or that's that, but not with the same quickness and precision. I have to like sit there and like step it out in my head. Okay, that's 20 yards, that's 40, where before I could just look at something and be like, oh yeah, that's 60 yards, I'm gonna shoot that for 60.
Yeah, no, it's a great feeling to have when you can do that. And when you even if you do use the rangefinder, right? So if you range something and then you stand up to shoot and it spooks out another 20 to 30 yards, having the ability to be able to go quickly and not pull up your rangefinder and go, okay, now that's now that's 60, or now that's 52. Put the 50-yard pin on it and let's make this happen. That ability that is so, it's so great to have. And that's, I'm working on that every day when I'm out shooting as well. So but it's not as finely tuned as it was 20 years ago for me, because that's all I had to do. Right, when it came to shooting. So Yeah, no, it's such fun, and when you get out and do it with your buddies like you're doing, and you make a game of it, that's what it's all about. Just getting out and shooting and enjoying it with your friends. And if you're practicing at that kind of level, then it just translates to the hunting game real quick.
For sure. Let's talk a little bit about sheep specifically. Let's talk about some of their behavior stuff. Do you find that they're very nomadic, or do they have a tight home range?
Yeah, it really depends on the location of the sheep and the species. So let's talk about stone sheep first. I find that stone sheep are way more apt to travel long distances, and they're also more inclined to be living down in the trees at the timberline. So that in itself, those two things make stone sheep more difficult to hunt. So more difficult to spot because they spend time in the trees and they do tend to move more. Now, that is also specific to certain locations because you can find stone sheep that live on certain mountain blocks, and there's not the potential for a whole lot of movement because of, major rivers or, but having said that, they have tracked sheep that have moved like considerable distances, like 100 kilometer type distances.
Wow.
And I've watched rams near my house. They'll move. These are doll sheep. They'll, move across country through a river drainage, and it's only about, only about 10 kilometers from mountain block to mountain block. But I've watched them walk through valleys and swim across rivers and then go up the next, into the next mountain block. So they do, doll sheep do tend to do that too, but not at the same level as stone sheep, in my opinion. Now, doll sheep, I think that they're certainly more located. So if you find sheep in a certain area, for the most part, they're probably going to be there again next year. So they don't tend to move that much. And same for stone sheep, but it depends on what time of year that you see them. Like stone sheep will move great distances to their winter range, whereas doll sheep, they'll move, but they don't tend to move to the same level.
The doll sheep, I heard this, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong or not, but they just basically follow the snow line. Is that
Like up and down a mountain, you mean? Like as far as no, I wouldn't say that.
okay.
I've seen. You mean as the snow comes in, they'll move down with it?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean every animal's looking for open grass, right? So and just access to easier feed. So I guess that is, that certainly can be this the situation depending on the amount of snow. But, in October, I've seen rams sitting right up on the tops of mountains,
Okay.
and they have to be, pawing away to get at that feed. But where they could walk down and be on the lower slopes, I don't think that there's any real right answer to that. But certainly, every animal, sheep included, are going to go toward the best potential graze, with the minimal amount of effort. So there's probably something to that, but I wouldn't say that it's a exact science.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you about like scouting and stuff like that, but for the
Yeah,
purpose of
thanks for not.
the podcast, realistically, like everybody that's listening to my podcast, the only way they're going to be able to go is go with a guide. So they really don't need a scout, So it's like,
So let's talk about guiding and about what a guy in Arizona, if he ever wanted to go on a hunt, what he should be looking for in an outfitter.
Absolutely. That's a great topic.
Because I've said that I think like sheep are underrated as far as are under, sorry, underpriced. And I know that that's, you know, it's a statement that is not very palatable when it's a $25,000 hunt. But so I understand that. But when you're going to drop that amount of money, if you have the disposable income, or if this is a once in a lifetime and you've saved for 10 years, and I would suggest if you love hunting, do it. Sit, do what it takes. Save for 10 years if that's what it takes. But get out on a sheep hunt. But really, what it is you need to know. I believe that clients need to take a more active role in their outfitters and knowing the area that they're going. Now, some guys are great, and they certainly do that. And I think outfitters, and I'm not necessarily going to be popular with these kind of conversations with outfitters, but outfitters have to have better guides. Guides need to get paid more, and they need and there needs to be communication between hunter and guide before the season starts. All of, in my opinion, if you want to do the hard work that it takes, whether that's money, whether that's the physical, whether that's a mental prep, whether that's, you know, eating healthier, doing all of these things to get to go on a sheep hunt, to give yourself the best opportunity that you can, demand that your outfitter does this, has the same level of commitment to you, because you're paying good money to go on a hunt. You they should, in my opinion, the outfitter should know who's guiding you, and they should be able to give you their resume, and they should also pay those guides really well. Because this is, in my opinion, the problem with the industry right now is, and traditionally has been, is the quality of guide is not at a level that meets the amount of money being spent, in my opinion. Now, there are some great guides out there, lots of great guides out there, but it's hard to make a living as a guide. And if you have, you know, and this is difficult, because if you have, some outfitters don't have a huge amount of tags, so they can't employ, you know, a great guide all season long, right? So there clearly are issues with my theory, but at the same time, in the north, and you specific to the Yukon and maybe Alaska, there are a number of tags, and I think that the guide outfitting areas should have great guides, and they should really communicate with their clients. And the flip side of that is that if you're a client and you go to the effort to, you know, you have the financial means to make this happen, you also better be prepared to hunt. Like this, there's two sides to this thing. Outfitters need to make a commitment to you as the client, and you need to make a commitment to that outfitter and that guide. You need to show up physically prepared to the best that you know. Nobody has to be a professional athlete, but you need to come and have put in the effort. Because if you're willing to pay that money, and you expect a good guide, and you expect, you know, all of these things from your outfitter, well, your outfitter also expects that you come prepared. And when I say prepared, it's, you know, as physically prepared as you can be. Put in, you know, put in the time. If you just, you know, start working out 3 weeks before sheep season, well, that's not doing the work here.
No.
And that's not fair. That's not fair to an outfitter, and it's also not fair to a guide. So there's a number of changes that really have to, that I think in the sheep world at the high end need to change. And that would make success rates go up, and everybody's satisfaction would increase. So yeah, the whole being ready for the hunt goes both ways, from the outfitter to the client. And when I say be ready to hunt, I mean also be prepared to hunt. Like, not just be physically ready and mentally ready and have the ability to pay for the tag, but be prepared to hunt. Be prepared to look through your glass for hours. Be prepared to sit in the shitty weather for hours and be an active participant in the experience, in the hunt. I can't tell you how many guys that I've, in the past that I've guided that decided to pick their binoculars up off of their chest that they've carried around for, a handful of hours on a, a 10-day hunt. Like, that would never happen to me again, because I would just, it would be like I would be communicating with the hunter and saying, okay, this is what I expect. Like, what do you expect from me as a guide? And this is what I expect from you. If you want the best chance of success, this is what I'm going to do for you, but I also expect you to suck it up when the weather is no good. And I expect you to hike when it's pouring rain in a valley and we're traveling from one area to the next. You're going to be wet, you're going to be cold, and that's just going to be part of the experience. And also, you can expect that I am going to, to work my hardest for you to obtain the goal that you've come to obtain. And not always is the goal to harvest, the goal is can be multifaceted, right? It doesn't have to be all about the kill. Some people want to experience, just the nature, and if they don't get a ram, they're still fulfilled. So that's where the communication has to be, what are your goals as a hunter? And everybody's going to say, well, I want to kill a ram. Otherwise, you wouldn't be there. But at the same time, you have to be communicating as to how hard that you're willing to, the effort that you're willing to put to make this happen. Because so it's like anything. That's like a marriage. It's just about communication and talking to each other and figuring out, the best game plan that everybody comes out happy with. And that's just the key. And I think more of that has to go on in the client guide world.
For sure. I mean, I can't say with certainty that I do or not, but I guide here. I own an outfitting business here in Arizona, and I always make it a point that my guide, the guide that's going to be taking you out, has at least a couple conversations with you on the phone before you come out. I'm pretty good about giving you what to expect on the hunt. Everything from like weather conditions to the type of hunting we'll be doing, and so on and so forth. And I think it's really important for that person to have the best experience possible that all this information is given. And I also give them my expectations of what type of, where their skills are at. I can't tell you how many times I get, guys that show up that they're sighting their bow in camp, not just checking it. Yeah, I mean, honestly, you got to check it from travel, but actually sighting it in.
Oh
Or
no.
we had a guy once in a rifle hunt that was like reading the drop compensation off the side of his box to make a long shot, and I was like, you told me you could shoot out there 400 yards, this is not, I'm not going to let you take this shot because this is going to win, you're going to wound this animal or whatever.
At best.
Yeah, exactly. So, this is, it's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's.
Well, it sounds like you're doing it right. Like, this is, and I don't believe that that is going on to the highest, to a high enough level. Certainly, maybe if it's, I don't know, if If you're hunting bears over a bait, maybe that level of conversation doesn't need to be had. But certainly when you're in sheep country and you're in the back and you're like, there's no one coming. It's up to you and the dude that's standing there beside you. Like this, there's no time for trying to figure shit out then. It's like we need to have this dialed in like a month or months in advance. And I think that that's where the sheep world certainly needs to be is, quality high level guides, and they need to be paid so that they can make it a career. And that's the key to having great success, is having guys that this is their career. And then they're bought in. And the only way to do that is to actually have good wages, because when you're charging, $25 to whatever, $55,000 for a sheep hunt, yeah, you want a good guide,
And that translates down to, hunts here. We're only spending only, and I say only, but it sounds only comparison to 25, 50 to $50,000. But when you're spending $3,500 to $6,000 on a deer or an elk hunt or whatever, I get that a lot. Like, oh, you're quite a bit more expensive than the other guy. Or they don't even say it, and I know that they book with this other guy because he's cheaper. But when the overall experience, I mean, if the outcome might still be the same, like you might still get something, I don't know. But when the overall experience is this versus that, I feel like,
You get what you pay for.
right,
Like it's not hard to figure out when, if you're going because the price is cheaper, then you can expect that the level of proficiency and the level of professionalism may not be there. And as long as you're okay with that, then great. You're making the decision based on economics, and I get it. Absolutely, go for it. And but that's just what you can expect. When a price for a sheep hunt, or in your case, an elk hunt, is $2,000 difference from, say, another guy, it doesn't get it. It doesn't take many seasons to figure out why that is. And if somebody's been around for a number of years as an outfitter, then there's going to be information out there, and you need to figure it out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and one other thing that you mentioned about, the guide's getting paid well. I feel like when the guide isn't getting paid well, you can see it, like he's playing on his phone or he's, doesn't want to go up. He finds something way up high and doesn't want to go up after it, talks you out of it. That kind of stuff. Like I've been on those hunts before myself, or been around guys that are like that. And it's just like, I know when you come hunting with me and you come hunting with, the guys that work for me, they're gonna bust their ass, whether it's a freaking javelina or it's a a trophy elk or whatever. They're gonna bust their ass until it's time for you to go home or you've gotten something. And that it always translates to whether the guy's getting paid enough to do that or not,
Economics is a big driver.
So yeah, they're not doing it. Well, I mean, they do it because they love it, but they're also doing it because it's what they do for a living.
And at the end of the day, everybody's got to put food on the table, right?
Exactly.
So.
Cool. Well, the last thing I wanted to is what I started the podcast. I wanted to ask you, if you had some tips on how to score a ram on the hoof.
I think that for me, if I'm looking at, sheep with thin horn sheep up here, some of the things that I look for is in sheep, it's all about mass. If you're looking, you're looking for a high scoring ram, it's going to be whether it's a bighorn down south or It's going to be about mass at the end of the day. That's really where your score is going to come from. So some of the things I look for are obviously heavy bases, but that weight being carried out throughout the whole horn. If you're talking thin horn sheep, quite often you can have sheep that are broomed off, and a broomed ram, thin horn ram, is just never going to score. I
Right.
shouldn't say never. It's just very hard for it to score, for it to book. It's just difficult because they're thin horned and they don't carry that. As soon as broom off those 6 inches of horn, that's just going to be the way it is. So
Right.
not like those big horns down south or the desert sheep, where they're typically always broomed off, but they're just this massive,
Yeah,
blocks,
got it.
right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm looking for obviously weight carried throughout the whole horn, tipped out, and that sheep that horn has to drop low, like below the chin. Chin at minimum, and if you get a ram that drops below the jaw, then you've got, and then comes up and flares up above, a few inches above the eye, you've got a big ram if it's
Now,
holding that weight.
that's the inside curl, that like the inside part of the curl is below the chin, or are you talking about the bottom of the
The
outside?
bottom, yeah, the bottom of the curl. If you're looking at that sheep from the side or the front, and you can see that both those horns come down and they're below the jaw level, then that you've got some length in the horn right there. Because they typically come off the top of the head fairly close. Obviously some will come off, and move back quickly, and some will come off a little bit higher. But that's one of the things I look for, and then distance between the horn, on the top of the head, how much hair is sticking out there, how much distance can you tell that is between those two horns. And obviously if you've got looks like it's got good mass and you've got a small gap there, then you're probably looking at a big ram that drops down low and flares out, then you're looking at a big ram. So yeah, those thin horn rams that come off with 12.5 inch bases, and just if they don't have the bases, they're just not gonna make it.
Cool. So before we jump off here, I wanted to ask you if you would share with us one of your favorite sheep stories. Maybe something that you learned, something, I don't know. You've had some adventures, but whatever you want. I'm not picky.
All right. Well, one of my, one of the favorite hunts that I've done in the last, well, just one of the favorite hunts that I've done is 2 years ago. I always wanted to hunt sheep from my front door, human powered. So that was one of the hunts that we did in season one of the show. And I basically left the front door with pulling a kayak on wheels down to the lake that's only a few kilometers from town, or sorry, from my house, and jumped in the kayak, and we started on a that was a 45, I think 45K paddle, and then there was like a 70K trek after that, and there was pack rafting involved, and airdrops, and I just wanted to be able to do a sheep hunt from my front door and be successful. And that there was a particular ram that I've been watching for, I guess, 4 years at that point, and I thought that ram could have potential to come close to book. But yeah, so that particular ram was one that I was after, and I needed to travel that distance in order to get to it. So it was a long journey. It was, a couple days to from my front door to get, to the mountain block that ram was on before we could start hunting. And I guess the other interesting thing is, kind of best laid plans, is that I knew exactly what RAM that I wanted. I didn't obviously know where I knew what mountain block he was in, but I certainly didn't know where he was in that block. And I didn't end up harvesting that RAM because I came across a RAM that I had never seen before that I didn't know was there. And and that RAM ended up being 14 years old, broomed off, heavy on both sides, and it was just one of those. It was just one of those old rams that I knew I couldn't walk past. The other one that I was after was, much prettier and it was going to score better, but this was a ram that I couldn't walk past. And as soon as I saw it and could really identify it, and the age of it, I just kind of went, I got to give up the dream about the other one because this is the right one to take off this mountain. And I couldn't be any happier for taking that ram. And it ended up being the oldest ram killed that year in the Yukon. And yeah, so it best laid plans, but ultimately the idea was to, to just do it human powered from my front door, and that's how we did it.
You lost me at 4K. I'm just kidding. I just mess it around. But oh man, that's a trek, man. So all in all, you're talking what was like 80 kilometers total,
Oh no, it would have been,
one way
yeah, it was more than that. It was probably, it was over 100 for sure.
one way. That's crazy. And of course, you got to pack all that back. You packed it all back out, human powered, or you had.
Yep, no, we had pack rafts airdropped in, and we pack rafted it. So it was kind of, leisure after that.
Gotcha. Crazy, man.
Yeah.
That's definitely beyond my desire to push myself. Yeah.
That's the key word is the desire, right? It's
Yeah,
not beyond your ability, it's beyond the desire.
it might be beyond my ability at this point too, but I don't know.
I think that it's amazing what the human mind can accomplish when it makes the decision, right?
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, awesome,
Yeah.
Greg. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing some of your knowledge, and that story was great.
Yeah,
Where can
I
our listeners
appreciate you
find?
having me, John. I
Yeah,
appreciate you
no
having me.
problem. Where can our listeners find out more about you and tell us when the shows air, show airs and whatnot?
Yeah, so we air this July come up season two on the Sportsman Channel. Our main airtime is Saturday afternoon, and but we're on obviously a number of times during the week. But you can find us on Greg McHale's Wild Yukon. If you I subscribe to our Instagram, Facebook and YouTube. We're trying to provide content on the YouTube channel that is, educational for specific to mountain hunting. But yeah, that's I really and I don't know when this is going to air, John, but if it's on the air before the end of the sheep. The Stone Sheep Draw. I would really recommend that any of your listeners, if you ever dream of a sheep hunt, then up in the north, then maybe get your name in.
I did it while we were talking.
Did you?
Yep. Oh man.
Good.
We'll see.
Good.
I've never won a
Good.
single thing in my life, but oh, that's not true. I won a BB gun at a Mule Deer Foundation banquet, but and actually two rifles that day. I won a BB gun and a HMR 17. So that's the only thing I
Nice.
won. And I've put a lot of money into raffle tick tags and all kinds of
Yeah.
stuff like that my whole life. So
Well, then you can save your money for the next raffle tag and just get your name in for free
there
because
you go.
that's what Kuyu Vortex and Gunworks and I have tried to make this as painless as possible and hopeful and doesn't cost anybody anything. So
Awesome.
hopefully you get you maybe you're the guy. Maybe this is your chance, John.
Ah man, I'll be that would be I'll even wear the Kuyu. I'll make that sacrifice for you. I'm just messing with you, man.
No doubt.
I
No
would
doubt you would.
I would love to win, man. That would be so epic. That would be
Right on.
incredible, incredible hunt. All right, man. Well, thanks for coming on, and we'll talk with you soon.
Sounds good, John. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Take it easy.
Cheers.
Hey guys, want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand in hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.